Please join me in 2 Samuel, chapter number 12, verse number 26 is where we're going to be. You should be aware that 1 Chronicles also tells this story in chapter number 20, starting right around the end of verse number 1. 2 Samuel 12, 26 says that Joab fought against Rabbah of the Ammonites and took the royal city. My best understanding of this is that the war of Israel against the rebellious Ammonites lasted 3 calendar years for the Jewish people. And we've arrived at that third year. I think it probably started in 996 in the fall, and it's going to be finished up sometime in 995 BC. Solomon, the second son of David and Bathsheba, will be born sometime in 995 BC, it seems to me. But Joab has held out this siege against the city of Rabbah, modern city of Ammon, Jordan, is what we're talking about here, until the city is suffering so badly on lack of supplies that Joab knows one final military push against them and the city will have to surrender. And so David apparently has already told Joab that he wants to be the one there when that finally happens. Because all of this started when David's condolence messengers at the loss of the last Ammonite king were insulted by the new king and his counselors. So David wants to be there when this is all concluded. So verse 27, Joab sent messengers to David and said, I fought against Rabbah. Moreover, I've taken the city of waters. Now that's apparently something nearby, more than likely a water source for the big city that he is now in full control of. And so he knows that this city is, the city's defenses are going to collapse now. Verse number 28, now, gather the rest of the people together, meaning the rest of the army of Israel, and encamp against the city, take it, lest I take the city and it be called by my name. So he tells David, you need to show up here with the rest of the military forces and take this city, because if it falls to me, I get to name it after myself. But I know that you're the one that wants to be here and take it. Joab has got a bit of an attitude issue with David, and you can tell that in the way that he talks to him. He's his nephew, but he is a pretty tough guy himself, and I'm sure that his inside knowledge of David's affair and the cover-up of that affair through the death of Uriah the Hittite, I'm sure that's just heightened Joab's disdain for his uncle David. Anyway, verse 29 says, David gathered all the people together, they went to Rabbah, they fought against it, and they took it. So they take the city, apparently mostly intact is what I gather. And then there's this handover of authority through the ceremonial crown. Verse 30, he took the crown of their king from his head. The weight of it was a talent of gold, and in it was a precious stone, and it was placed on David's head. Now, this is amazing. A talent at its lowest number in the ancient world was something like upper 60 pounds. Typically, you see it as a range of 75 to 100 pounds. So think of 65, 70, 75 pounds of gold formed into some sort of ceremonial crown. That is a lot of weight. It's not intended to be worn all the time. It's probably intended to only be worn in the crowning ceremony. And so the previous king, the one that rebelled against David, has it on his head at the beginning of this ceremony, and it is lifted up off of his head, probably by a couple of different strong guys, and then moved over and seated on David's head. And David, no doubt, bears it up momentarily on his own to show that he is the king over the Ammonites. And then it's probably removed and then kept on display nearby. And so David is now officially the king of the Ammonites by conquest, by right of conquest. And so he brought out the spoil of the city, a very great amount. That's typical post-battle behavior. To the victor goes the spoils. And I have little doubt that a lot of the materials that David's collecting now, precious metals, gold, silver, bronze, iron, all of that is being set aside for the future building of the temple at Jerusalem. We've already seen a place where David set aside some of the spoil of battle for that purpose. Verse 31 has been misunderstood because of translators in the past to English as a whole bunch of executions. And I don't think that's what was intended by the Hebrew. I think it's idiomatic. And I am happy to see that the English Standard Version translators have gone with this understanding that we're about to read. David brought out the people who were in it, that is, in Rabbah, and he set them to labor with saws and iron picks and iron axes and made them toil at the brick kilns. So he's not chopping these people up, which is what some of the old versions used to say, and he's not burning them up. Part of their penalty for insulting David's messengers and for rebelling against David's tribute is that they have to now work for him, provide services for him, hard work. They have to cut stuff and make bricks and things of that nature. And it wasn't just simply at Rabbah. It says, thus he did to all the cities of the Ammonites. And then David and all the people returned to Jerusalem. And so all this is resolved then, I think, by the time we get to the beginning of the 23rd year of King David. I think that starts in fall of 995 B.C., he would have been about 53 years of age, and we're in the second half of his kingdom now, which he doesn't know that, but we do. His kingdom is about 40 years long. Next thing that happens is David's adult sons start acting out. And part of this, I believe, is because of David's sin becoming better known in his family and in society as a whole. So chapter 13 of 2 Samuel says this. Now, Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. Now, these are the sons that were born at Hebron. And since we're in like the 23rd year or so of David, these sons are going to be in their very early 20s and very late teens. So Amnon is the eldest, so he's probably going to be about 21 or so, 22. And Absalom is going to be right at that break point in his very early 20s or very late teens. But they come from different moms, Absalom and Amnon. And that's part of the story here, because David has married multiple wives. So Absalom has a full sister that he shares mom and dad with, named Tamar. After a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her. So how old is Tamar? We don't know. She's not married, so she's probably in her upper teens. She's not engaged yet, so again, she's probably in her upper teens. And half-brother falls in love with her. Amnon was so tormented that he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. So Amnon is so infatuated, so overwhelmingly drawn to his half-sister Tamar that he is making himself physically ill, because he knows in his heart there's something wrong with this, to be in love with your half-sister. It's actually against Jewish law to be married to your half-sister. And so he feels that this is out of reach, and it's killing him. Verse 3. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother. That means that he is Amnon's cousin. Now, Jonadab was a very crafty man, so he was kind of sly. He knew how to make things work. And so he said to him, "Oh, son of the king." By the way, remember that Amnon is the firstborn of David. So by all customary practices of this time period, of this region, he is the crown prince. He is the guy that will be king when his father dies. That's the way things are looking. So he says, "Oh, son of the king, why are you so haggard morning after morning? Will you not tell me? So why do you look so rough every morning when we get together?" And Amnon said, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." So he confesses, "I am totally infatuated with my half-sister." Jonadab said to him, "Why don't you lie down on your bed, pretend to be ill. When your father comes to see you, then say to him, 'Let my sister Tamar come and give me bread to eat and prepare the food in my sight that I may eat it, see it and eat it from her hand.'" So cousin says, "Look, you can be alone with her if you just tell your dad that you're feeling really rotten and that you think it would make you feel better and get you well faster if your sister Tamar would come and feed you." And so Amnon thinks that sounds like a deal. So Amnon lay down and he pretended to be ill. When the king came to see him, Amnon said to the king, "Please let my sister Tamar come and make a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat it from her hand." And so David sent home to Tamar and said, "Go to your brother Amnon's house, prepare some food for him." Now, David seems to be completely in the dark about his son Amnon's infatuation with his daughter Tamar. And so he just figures, all right, sounds like it should work. So, Tamar, go help your sick brother get better. Go make some food for him. And so she is obedient. She went to her brother Amnon's house. See, Amnon is living in his own house. He's not at the palace, but Tamar is. So that's another reason to think that he's over the age of majority, which is 20 at this time, and she's below the age of majority. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house where he was lying down. She took dough, kneaded it, made cakes in his sight, baked the cakes. So she's making little flatbreads. And then she took the pan, she emptied it out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, "Send out everyone from me." And so everyone went out from him. So he clears the room of other people. Now, I am sure that that made Tamar very nervous already. That's unusual behavior. Even though they are half-brother and sister, and therefore intimate interaction, as in being alone with one another, is acceptable, even though probably frowned upon, she probably senses something weird going on here. Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food into the chamber that I may eat it from your hand." Now, the chamber here means bedroom. Before that, they were apparently out in the living space. So Tamar took the cakes she'd made. She brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. But when she brought them near to him to eat, he took hold of her and said, "Come, lie with me, my sister." So now he becomes blatant as to what he wants. "I want you and me to have sex together. Let's do it." Now she answered, "No, my brother, do not humble me. Don't violate me this way, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Don't do this outrageous thing. As for me, where can I carry my shame? And as for you, you'd be as one of the outrageous fools in Israel." So she, understands now what's going on, and she is panicked. And she's like, "No, don't rape me," because that's actually what it's going to be. That would be bad for me. It would be bad for you. And then in her panic, I think she tries to come up with a delaying technique. She says, "Now therefore, please speak to the king. He'll not withhold me from you." Now, I already told you, the law is very clear on this, that half-siblings don't marry one another. They don't have sexual relations with one another. It's against the law now. It was acceptable way back in the time of Abraham, because the gene pool was so much deeper, so much broader back in that time. But by the time of Moses, the gene pool had deteriorated enough that God made the rule: no sibling marriage. And that includes half-siblings. So even though I'm sure this young lady knows that it's actually against the Mosaic law, she is bargaining for her situation. She says, "No, talk to our dad. I am sure he'll make arrangements. If you really wish me to be your wife." But he wouldn't listen to her. And being stronger than she, he violated her and lay with her. Now that language there makes it clear, exceptionally clear. This is a rape. It's not the situation that happened with Dinah and Shechem back in the book of Genesis that we talked about, which I told you there's no language used there to indicate violence. It seems to be all a relationship between two young people that was not appropriate. This one's totally different. The violent language occurs here. He's stronger than her, and he rapes her. And then, verse 15, Amnon hated her with very great hatred. so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. So there's a psychological thing that happens here where he gets what he wanted, which was a sexual relationship with this woman, this young lady that he is infatuated with, but it doesn't meet his expectations because she is resistant to it. She fights him on it. And so now he hates her for the way he feels. It's very psychological. And he said to her, get up. Go. Get out of here. Leave. But she said to him, no, my brother. This is wrong in sending me away. It's greater wrong than the other that you did to me. So she basically, again, she's still in this panic mode. She is in victim mode. And her thinking is, no, I have been ruined by him now. The least that could happen here is that he marry me and make it legitimate. Now remember, their culture totally different than ours. Marriages were arranged. Both men and women often went into relationships with no emotion toward that person, no feelings of love toward that person, but they did it out of a sense of duty to their family. And eventually, with time, hopefully, they grew to love the person. And so she kind of is coming out of that cultural background, and she's like, no, what you're trying to do now is worse than what you just did to me. You're making me a ruined woman. And so verse 17, he called the young man who served him and said, put this woman out of my presence and bolt the door after. So basically throw her out and lock the door. Verse 18, now she was wearing a long robe with sleeves, for thus was the virgin daughters of the king dressed. This was the cultural clothing of an unmarried and probably unbetrothed woman in this time period. Long robe, long sleeves. And so what does she do? It says that his servant put her out, bolted the door after her, and Tamar put ashes on her head and tore the long robe that she wore. So she rips up the clothing that she's wearing, not in the simple grief that is symbolized in the society of this time by ripping her clothing, but she rips probably the sleeves off of this clothing because the clothing symbolized that she was a virgin. And she is no longer a virgin, and she is grieving over the loss of her virginity. She laid her hand on her head and went away crying aloud as she went. So she has marked herself with ashes and ripping of her clothing. She's putting her hand up over her head, and she runs away crying because of all of this, because of the rape. And where does she go? She goes to her brother Absalom's house, who is also apparently of majority age. I think he probably is over 20. And so her brother Absalom said to her, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? Somehow he knew about this breakfast thing. And because of her grief, because of her ripping of her clothing, you know, the ripping off of the sleeves perhaps, being the dead giveaway, that she's been raped. And so immediately wheels start turning in his head. And he says, hold your peace, my sister. He's your brother. Don't take this to heart. So I need you to just calm down and wait. And so Tamar lived a desolate woman in her brother Absalom's house. So she doesn't go back home with dad and mom at the palace. She lives with her big brother, just a few years probably older than her. And she lives as the words that I used earlier, a ruined woman. Now, verse 21. When King David heard all these things, he was very angry. But apparently not angry enough to bring his eldest son up on charges, huh? Why is that? I think there's some more psychology that goes on in here. It's only been a couple of years ago that David committed adultery, tried to cover it up, actually caused the death of the husband of the woman that he committed adultery with. And so I am guessing that David very likely feels incapable of bringing judgment upon his own son for a similar sort of sexual violation. And that really ticks off Absalom, I think. Absalom spoke to Amnon neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had violated his sister Tamar. We'll find out with time that Absalom also hates his father. Hates him so much that he wants him dead. And so this is just the beginning of the fruit, the rotten fruit of David's sin. And it will cause great trouble that radiates through the entire kingdom. Mark your place right there. We'll get back into the word next time God gives us ability.